Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Mike Wolfenden. How are you, Mike?
Yeah, very thanks. Very good, thanks, Chris.
Excellent. You're the assistant winemaker here in Fountain Road?
Yep, been here since 2011.
What we're going to do today is, well, one of the things about Central Otago and that we explored last week with the Chardonnays was the change in style in Central Otago in terms of the wines. One of the things I've noticed, and I'm not, you know, this is something I've never really studied it in detail, but one of the things I've noticed over the years is that when I first started drinking Central Otago wines about 15, 16 years ago, they were big, black, high alcohol, you know, they were closer to Shiraz than they were what I would call, you know, Burgundian Pinot Noirs. You know, they are massive, massive wines. And from my point of view, anyway, I think there's been a general style to slightly more lighter styles. Do you agree with that, or am I a bit crazy?
I can agree with that. I think particularly for those of us that come from Europe, and that was very much my first experience of Central Otago Pinot Noir too, that the wine was, I was fantastically impressed by the wines, but they weren't Pinot Noir as I knew it.
Yeah.
But, you know, looking back now, yeah, I think the difference isn't as great as it was, but perhaps that's been a shift in style from both directions.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised to see, particularly if those Grand Cru wines from Burgundy are being made in a slightly bigger style now.
Yeah.
You know, global warming is perhaps making Burgundy a little bit warmer too.
And fashion.
Fashion's have made those wines a bit bigger. The changes that have occurred here, possibly are partly influenced, or certainly to some extent will be influenced by fashion, but greater than that will be the influence of the growing expertise here in Central Otago, the depth of experience, the change in vine age, and the ability of wine growers to achieve good balance in their fruit, so that winemakers don't need to really be winemakers. You know, they've just got to guide the fruit through the cellar rather than, you know, making interventions. And we're getting a pure expression of sight, which is less extracted, not quite as big. I don't think the alcohols have really changed very much.
Yeah, but they're still about 14%, aren't they?
Yeah, but it's perhaps better balanced, better integrated into the wines. I don't think we're ever going to be an area that makes that can naturally achieve low alcohol Pinot Noir.
What do you think's driving that?
We don't want for sunlight here in Central Otago. Mm. You know, for us, when we go through the stages of development in the vines, from flowering to bunch formation, veraison harvest, it perhaps takes us a few more days than other areas in New Zealand, and certainly other areas internationally. We get these amazing cold night temperatures, these huge diurnal temperature shifts. Before harvest, it could be zero in the morning and still arrive at 30 degrees in the afternoon. So we get these massive up to 30 degree diurnal temperature shifts. That's part of what's forms a unique character of our wines. But it also means that to achieve the total heat summation required to achieve physiological ripeness takes us a little longer. So that's more sunlight, more photosynthesis, higher sugars, hence higher alcohols.
Okay.
So I've seen it written in a journal that if global warming, makes us a few degrees warmer, which it's forecast to do over the coming decades, that, you know, the wines will have even higher alcohols. And that's actually logically the opposite of that. You know, if we get a little bit warmer, we'll perhaps be harvesting a little earlier, and the alcohols will perhaps be lower.
Okay, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Yeah, that could possibly happen, isn't it?
Absolutely. I've seen forecasts which are a few degrees warmer and a few hundred mils wetter. I don't think it's necessarily going to be a bad thing for us at all.
Yeah. Okay. That's nice things to look forward to.
Yep.
Global warming. It's funny. England's one of those countries that will do quite well with global warming. So the government's fighting tooth and nail to try and stop it. Yeah. Okay. What we've got in front of us is four Pinots from various locations around Fountain Road. But I think the key thing is they're different ages, aren't they? The vines themselves are different ages.
The reason we've decided to look at these four Pinots is to try and use them as an illustration of the effect of vine age here. So we're going from our very youngest vines, planted in 2011.
So it's about 4 years old at the moment.
Yeah, going forward to 9-year-old to 15-year-old to 23-year-old.
Yep.
Vines from the very get-go can grow fruit which has a sense of place. The wines have a sense of place, and that's, I think, in the early days, almost purely a reflection of climatic conditions. It's the heat, the sunlight, the wind at those vineyard sites. As the vines get older, their root systems get deeper and deeper. They start to develop carbohydrate stores in their trunks and their branches, which allow them to have greater components of site expression based on soil type. And that tends to show itself in the wines as a really strong, persistent structure. So in the young wine, the fruit offers itself like a little bit like an explosion or a breaking wave. You know, it's there and then it crashes and is gone. Doesn't necessarily have a great persistence of form.
Yeah, people often talk about the first year as almost like a fruit bomb sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, very pleasurable wine. It's really very, very fruity, very enticing. But in terms of its depth of personality, its persistence of structure.
And length.
It doesn't, and its length, it doesn't have a patch on those older vines.
Hmm. I noticed on the nose on the first one, I sort of put it down as more cherry, slightly candy flossy type convicted aroma.
Quite young, sweet fruit.
I often associate some of those aromas with just being a little bit not quite ready for drinking. You know, these are barrel samples, so they're...
These are barrel samples and by no means finished wines.
Mm.
A long way yet, but even though they've only been in barrel for 9 months or so and are still set on the gross leaves, they haven't been wrecked yet. We can still, I think, accurately assess the structural component of the wines here. You know, it's a huge cliche to compare vines and wines to people as they age, but it's a cliche for a reason. I think it's quite a good illustration as we go from these really young, simple, sort of childish characteristics through, to growing greater intrigue through adolescence. And through to these really strongly formed structures in adulthood, where year on year there's less change. You know, the climatic conditions might vary greatly from vintage to vintage, but the soils remain the same. And so, as that soil component becomes more and more dominant, more and more prevalent, those older vines, or the wines from those older vines, are going to be more and more consistent year on year.
I noticed the first two wines, because I'm just tasting them while you're talking, they've both got quite a bitter finish. Is that just a function of just a bit more time in barrel to soften that out?
Yeah, could well be the case. You know, for example, Blair, winemaker here at Felton Road, and myself haven't even really started tasting the different components yet. We're not really started doing barrel tastings because we're only just now getting to that time at the end of malolactic fermentation where we can really start to look at them and have a good indication of where the wines are going.
They're a bit spritzy as well. I presume that's malolactic.
It's although the malolactic fermentations are complete here, it's the CO2 that was created during those fermentations still in the wine. You know, barrels are by no means an inert closed environment, but certainly in a cool cellar with a closed barrel, the CO2 will hang around for quite some time. That'll help to protect the wines to an extent. It's just a reflection of the stage that the wines are at.
The first wine, 4 year old, I was thinking cherry, candy floss, etc. The second wine, not really. That's 9 years old now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the vines are 9 years old.
Yeah.
Same winemaking process, but none of that real candy floss. I was thinking it was sort of starting to head more into the strawberry type of thing.
Yeah, heading away from that that really sweet easy fruit into something a little more earthy, a little more spicy. You know, some slightly more intriguing, complex characters.
I mean, I've tasted them all earlier, and I thought the last wine had quite a nice bit of spice there. So maybe to you, as a winemaker who knows wines better than I do, you can pick it up. To me, it was less of the candy fruit, the candy floss type aromas were gone, and it was more into sort of cleaner red fruits.
Because the wines are so young, and these are just barrel samples, and as you pointed out, there's CO2 present. I think tasting these wines now, I guess I'm not really focusing too much on the fruit component, you know, on these characteristics. It's not the same points that we're looking for in finished wines, and when we're drinking wines for pleasure. Here it's assessing the structural integrity, the persistence of the wines, sort of really trying to focus in on that, the way the wine forms its shape, how well it holds, how long it drives forward. And I think that's something where we see a huge jump from that first wine to the second wine. Both wines I'd happily drink for pleasure. Just the first wine there, from that such young fruit. Yeah, that fruit bomb, that explosion is there, and then shortly afterwards gone.
Depth of fruit is always a hard thing to describe, isn't it? Because it's probably easier. I know it sounds strange. I'm an electrical engineer background, so I can think in things that they call it the frequency domain. And to me, a fruit bomb is like the first wine is like a very big spike of, mm-hmm. you know, big hit of flavor, but there's no real more frequencies. There's no width to it, if you like.
Okay.
You might call it depth. People, it's like having a single note on a violin, if you like. Yep. But a really loud single note,
yeah, exactly,
if
yeah.
you like. Yeah. Whereas when you move into some of the other ones, that note is a lot more muted, so it doesn't have the intensity, but it's like playing a chord where you get more notes coming through at the same time. And if you can get them in harmony, it can be quite nice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Otherwise, the way I play music, it tends to be all completely wrong.
Yeah, we've all heard someone learning the violin.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, and hopefully, so if we jump forward to the last wine that, which is from Block 3 here at our Elms Vineyard, hopefully, what we'll see there is that harmony, that chord, a whole lot of complex notes coming together to form a note which then carries forward and has a resonance, as perhaps you'd look at it.
Because it's frequency domain. So.
Yeah, you know. So it builds up into like a harmonious wave, which then flows forward and doesn't crash or dissipate.
And it doesn't have, it certainly doesn't have the same intensity as the first wine. So this is a 23-year-old vine. So the vine, you know, the wines aren't as intense, but there is you call it resonance. I think of it as sort of a width in the frequency range, if you like, or something like that. And there's a bit of spiciness there as well, whereas I didn't really get it in the other wines as much. You might have spotted it, but for me it wasn't quite there. But you lost the bitterness as well. Remember I was saying earlier that the first wine had a little bit of bitterness on the finish? You're not getting that on the end wine as well.
Yeah, perhaps there in the first wine, you know, we're seeing that exuberant fruit from the young grapes, and we're seeing perhaps a little bit of a bitter edge from the other parts of the vine material, those stems and seeds.
Do you chuck in a bit of stems and seeds?
Yeah, we do. We'll tend towards, you know, between 20% and 30% whole bunch. We try and keep that consistent across all the wines. The idea with our, we make 5 Pinots here at Felton Road. The idea is that those 5 wines are representative of site, and as such, we don't want to make much differentiation in our winemaking approach, because if we did that, we'd be identifying the wines by our winemaking approach. We'd be able to say, this has got so much whole bunch, this has got so much new oak. So Blair, over time and experience, has discovered that with the whole bunch, that we're, you know, bringing some structure to the wine by using that percentage of whole bunch, but without using too much, that we can't really see it in the wine. You know, I don't think we ever taste the wines and really question the whole bunch component because it doesn't stand out. You know, if any part of the winemaking process is really, really evident in the wines, it's probably been excessive. Ideally, it adds something, but you don't really even notice it's there. It just fills in as
little
part,
holes,
as part of the, as part of the choir.
I think we'll wrap it up there, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Thank you very much for showing me your wines.
Yeah, I hope it's been instructive.
Cheers.